Hi, this is Bob Garfield with the special podcast edition of On the Media. Over the weekend, investigative reporter Seymour Hersh, he of My Lai, Abu Ghraib, and many other stunning exposés, broke another jaw-dropper. His 10,000-word piece in the London Review of Books alleged that the 2011 Special Forces operation that took the life of Osama bin Laden was not at all what the Obama administration has portrayed it to be. First, he said, bin Laden's whereabouts in an Abbottabad, Pakistan compound were not uncovered by painstaking CIA sleuthing about the movements of a bin Laden courier. Rather, the story stated, al-Qaeda's leader was dimed out by a Pakistani military intelligence officer who walked into the CIA with the information and got $25 million for his trouble. The officer told the CIA that bin Laden had been essentially under house arrest in Abbottabad for years. Another lie, Hersh maintains, is the Obama administration's claim that it acted alone in the raid without the knowledge of the Pakistanis. Hersh reported that, on the contrary, Navy SEAL Team 6 was escorted through the compound by a Pakistani operative. Most of Hersh's sources are anonymous. One key exception is retired Pakistani General Asad Durrani, who retired from the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, the ISI, in 1992. That sourcing is one reason the big scoop has been met not only with skepticism, but derision from other journalists. His conclusions have been dismissed as illogical. Jack Schaefer in Politico said Hersh was, quote, lost in the wilderness. Max Fisher, writing in Vox, said Hersh had gone off the rails. We caught up with Seymour Hersh Wednesday afternoon to talk about his story and the reaction to it. First of all, I have seen journalists rushing to play catch-up before. I have never seen anything like what I've witnessed this week, which is a rush by reporters and bloggers and pundits to play beat down, to impeach the facts of your story and to question whether you personally have taken leave of your senses. Let's start with, does that hurt your feelings?
No, you haven't done the best. Let's see, I'm also a plagiarist. That was written a couple of times, and I'm also in the throes of the Pakistani Intelligence Service. That was the other one. Just to answer your question, okay? You whippersnappers, you should have seen what happened after I wrote the end of 74 on the CIA domestic spying. That was a great story that led to the Church Committee. I was just wet, even when I did My Lai. Oh, my God. So this is, you know, how do you put a new one in old bottles?
All right. Now, to the bill of indictment, such that it is, your piece is pretty thinly sourced. I mean, it's very thinly sourced. There's a lot of anonymity.
Let me say this again. The stories I wrote about the CIA domestic spying came primarily from one person. That's the way it works. This is at the New York Times. I knew something about it. I finally learned an awful lot from one person. And what I did is I then took that information to others and verified. Once you know something, you can get a lot of things verified. Same process. I'm not saying it's the world's greatest process. I'm not saying that anonymity is the most wonderful thing in the world. I will tell you that we just saw somebody get 3.5 years just this week, talking to James Risen of the New York Times, maybe talking to him, because I thought the Jeffrey Sterling case was awfully thin. So, you know, I would say this sourcing was no thinner than most of the stories I've written since 9/11 at the New Yorker and elsewhere.
What makes your narrative plausible is our understanding that what goes on between the United States and Pakistan's ISI, the security agency, is often a very shadowy double or triple game where nothing can be taken at face value because of the existence of both conflicting and converging interests, from the Pentagon to the State Department to Pakistani political leaders facing domestic public opinion to the Taliban to India and the Kashmir conflict to personal fortunes, you name it. But, Sai, those conditions are exactly what makes your narrative suspicious, which made somebody suggest that you are being played like a fiddle. How do you figure out how good this anonymous information is in that environment?
Well, it just so happened within days of that raid, I was not among those standing in line for the White House take on it, because I didn't I'm not a daily newspaper reporter, and I don't have a beat, and I don't have to get the story, and I don't have to go and beg John Brennan or one of the advisors to the president to give me a fill. So I'm lucky that way. I can just sit back and look at the bigger picture. I also know people, and within days, I was hearing that there are a lot of problems from the Joint Special Operations Command point of view. And if some of you people know, I've been writing about JSOC for a long time. I know people there. I also independently got an email within 3 or 4 days from somebody I know in Pakistan to be very reputable, somebody I've dealt with, somebody who works at a high international positions in international organizations and above reproach. I also got information that actually matched what I was hearing at town at the same time. So we're talking about May 2011. That's pretty solid. And I'll tell you something else. I knew the night after the raid, I didn't write this because it's not relevant to this story, that there were very senior officials at the very top of the White House, very angry at Robert Gates because he had been very difficult about the raid.
Gates had complained that the White House was giving out too many of the operational details, and maybe false ones as well.
Gates publicly has written some very tough stuff about it, but his complaints went farther. The one thing you missed in the narrative about us in Pakistan, the very good narrative, you're exactly right about all the complexity. The one thing you missed, the one driving huge issue for the American National Security Group is the nuclear bombs in Pakistan. Pakistan is continuing to make nukes. They're defying our wishes that they stop. They're augmenting their ability to create fissionable material. So we worried to death about it. And we spent an inordinate amount of time cozying up to the top leaders. In this case, it would be, as it was in 2011, General Pasha, the head of Pakistani ISI, their counterpart to the CIA, and General Kiani, the chief of the staff, who basically runs the shop. And so we're nice to them. We give them over-the-table and under-the-table money. We take really good care of those guys. We work inside with some of the units in Pakistan to make sure that no extreme jihadists con their way into a senior position inside the small group of military people who guard and monitor the nuclear weapons. We're involved in that process. We don't want a weapon, as they call it, to get lost in the grass along the runway.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to first reiterate two key points from your article and ask you about them. One is your assertion that, contrary to the story that has been spun by the administration, it was not by triangulating on a courier that the CIA learned about bin Laden's whereabouts, but through a walk-in. A high-ranking ISI official who walked into the CIA and said, oh, by the way, we know where he is. And that, secondly, Pakistan knew about the raid, that contrary to what the administration said and what the Pakistani government said in its loud protests, they not only knew about but actually escorted the SEAL team into the compound. At the time of the raid, I think the American public wouldn't have minded if Osama bin Laden had died in a drone strike. They wouldn't have minded if he had died of kidney failure. They wouldn't have minded if he died of a piano falling on his head. Why create this vast tissue of lies and the chance of being unmasked if it doesn't matter to the American public how you got him?
Why have a raid? A raid's wonderful for a president. If he does it, he gets him. We did it. We got him. Also, assuming that I'm right, that the Pakistanis were in it, and you tell me the last time a group of SEALs flew into a strange country on a mission to hit somebody, two choppers full of 12 guys, no air cover, no backup anywhere nearby, flew into a compound at night in an area, it's a resort area, but Pakistan, anybody wealthy enough to have compounds has guards, and they're armed. They were talking about, if you remember in the original plan, they were going to repel and go down by rope into a courtyard. Are you kidding me? They knew there was nothing going to be there. That was the main part of the deal. They also knew electricity had been cut off for hours. The police had never showed up, and the fire department never showed up, despite the fact one of the choppers crashed, probably through pilot error, but they don't want to say that. But it crashed right outside the compound, They had to blow it up because of the high gear, the combo gear and other stuff, communications gear and other stuff they had in it. So you had a big fire going, you had bombs going off, hand grenades, and nobody's bothered you.
Cy, I was not born yesterday. Whippersnapper though I may be, I'm well aware of CIA participation in Latin America. I'm well aware of the regimes it propped up and knocked down. I'm well aware of the Gulf of Tonkin and a whole laundry list of mischief going back my entire 60 years.
No, you're older than I thought.
Yeah. I must say, when I read your story, the one thing that went through my head is not how could the American government do such a thing in our name, why that's just impossible. What I wondered was that I know how hard it is to keep a secret. I have trouble doing it. And with every extra person read in on the secret, it becomes exponentially more difficult to keep it secure. And the narrative that you are spinning suggests that there are hundreds of people in the administration, in the military, and the security forces of two governments who were in on the conspiracy. It just strikes me as being, on the face of it, unimaginable that first such a thing could survive 4 years, and secondly, that anyone in the administration would be dumb enough to take the risk.
Can I ask you a question? So how many people do you think in the American government in the years 2001, 2002, 2003, leading up to the late March attack on Iraq, knew that the government was misrepresenting the intelligence of the WMD? Let me go on. That's one question. So if Ed Snowden, there's 30,000 employees of the NSA, and God knows how many contractors like Ed was. Ed Snowden was a contractor. Let's say another 20,000 contractors. Let's just say 50,000. So if 50,000 people in the NSA, let's say 10% of them.
Oh, no. Okay, I see where you're going with this. Touché. I take your point.
One person only came out and said the Constitution's being violated. Was that a greater secret, do you think, a more important story than even the Bin Laden thing, which is just an operational thing? I mean, one person only of how many, 5,000, 10,000? Snowden happened 2 years ago. The WMD happened 10 years ago. We've demonstrated that you can cow the bureaucracy and you can cow people to an extraordinary length in this society. To the length where I can write a story like this, and I know I'm hearing from people indirectly today. I know there are a lot of people on the inside who know pieces of it, and nobody's going to go public on it.
As you know far better than I, when you write an investigative piece, once it's published, people come out of the woodwork with further information that either corroborates or maybe debunks it. We're speaking on Wednesday. Have you gotten more details that support your story, or anything to make you want to walk it back even a little bit?
I've gotten calls from friends on the inside who said, you know, we know you're right, but I haven't gotten anything that would amount to change the story. NBC, as you know, put out a story a couple of nights ago saying that there was a walk-in and that there were people in the Pakistani service knew that. They then got tremendous heat, so I gather, from the White House, and they modified it to say, yes, there was a walk-in, but he only gave us information about the courier, which I thought from listening to the White House and watching that wonderful movie that the White House had just a little bit to do with, Zero Dark 30, that the courier was all done by itself and there wasn't any help from the Pakistan. We tracked it all ourselves. Anyway, it doesn't matter. There have been stories from Pakistan. There were two stories, AFP and some newspaper there put out stories saying the same thing, that they had reason to believe there was a walk-in. A walk-in being somebody from the guy who walked in, wasn't, you mentioned ISI. It's a natural mistake. He was military intelligence, and they're close, but not quite the same. Ask me a good question. Here's a question you can ask me. Do I have any evidence that anything I say is true? Evidence.
Do you have any evidence that anything you say is true? Documents?
I don't have a piece of paper. I don't have a thing in writing that says anything. And I haven't had for all my stories. It's easy when you have a document. In the story I did about Abu Ghraib, I had an internal report that was devastating. And in the Mili story, when I was just a kid, I had seen a piece of paper I talked about, but I didn't have it. I had seen a piece of paper that said he was accused of the killing of the wonderful language, 109 Oriental human beings. But most of the stories you get, all those stories I was writing for The New Yorker after 9/11, were all done on exactly the same basis as this story. One main source, something you verify. The people at the London Review know who my source is. They've talked to him. They've talked to two different people, have talked to him three times, the basic source.
I want to ask you about Assad Durrani, the retired intelligence figure. You hang your hat very much on what he has to tell you, but Peter Bergen of CNN went back to the same guy, and he said, well, I have actually no evidence that Pakistan knew about bin Laden's whereabouts. It's not implausible, he said, but I have no evidence that we knew. How do you square that circle?
Well, I'll tell you how I square it. If you want, I'll send you an email that Durrani wrote Bergen with a copy to me after that was put on the air when I was on TV, saying, how dare you say that? You misquoted what I said. Bergen quoted him as saying he knew of no evidence. And what he said was something else. He says, I have no evidence, just like I don't. He doesn't have a document, but he was a four-star general. And look, it's hard for him because the truth of the matter is, obviously, I've known him for years, and I've interviewed him, as many reporters have. He went to Foundation. Even though he didn't serve for years, he's still very much in touch. And so he's still deeply involved in stuff and still acute. And he knew specifically things about the walk-in, and there were things he could say, I do know that this did happen. But he has no evidence, because nobody does. I will send you by email the letter that he wrote to Bergen. Maybe Bergen just made a mistake.
Right. Now, we're not talking about the walk-in by the military intelligence official. We're talking about Pakistan's foreknowledge of the raid. I thought Bergen was saying that Durrani denied having evidence of Pakistan's foreknowledge of the raid and participation, cooperation in the raid.
He was not a player to it. He learned afterwards, as I assure you, all of the retired four-star guys that used to run the ISA. That was a major, major issue for them, because it ended up when Obama went public and said we did it without any help and the Pakistanis weren't involved and we fooled them. We went in and out without their radar catching our plane and all that stuff. And the critical thing you must know, you must tell your audience, the whole critical crux of the story was that he was supposed to wait 7 to 10 days and then do it. Say we killed him in a raid in the Hindu Kush Mountains between Pakistan and Afghanistan, Waziristan. He was supposed to announce the raid later, that we had a drone attack, and we went and did the post-strike look. We saw the body, a body of a tall guy that looked like bin Laden, some smart guy. We took a picture, and we took his DNA, and by God, we got him. That way, nobody even knew we were in and out. Certainly, the Pakistanis did not want to do it for us, because, you know, at that time, we were running about 8% popularity. America was in Pakistan, and with bin Laden running probably 10, 12, 15 times that. Would have been all hell to pay for the army if they thought that the Pakistanis were actively involved. The only way it could be done was for us to come in and do it. The Pakistanis could not do it. The fear of getting out that they killed them was just overwhelming for the Pakistanis. We did it. We had to do it. And Durrani knew enough about it to say categorically to me, he called it a double cross, we made it something lesser. Because we didn't know, we couldn't, he agreed. No language was published in this piece without everybody, every principal seeing it. That's all I can tell you. We're back and forth, very careful. And so Bergen twisted his words in a way that offended him.
Seymour, I'm obliged to ask you one more question.
I'm glad this is the hardest one. Go ahead. But do me a favor, if you do the show, just because the question you asked is asked so many times to me, and I usually just don't bother. But the notion of conspiracy is really crazy when you think about one guy in the NSA went out.
No, I think that it was a good answer.
Fine. Go ahead. Keep on going.
At least in one of the headlines, it said that you are off the rails. And I have to tell you that a couple of your stories in the last few years that I looked at and, you know, I kind of winced concerning pending a U.S. attack on Iran, about chemical weapons in Syria, and our supposed false flag operation trying to deflect blame onto Assad, when we knew that, according to your narrative, that Islamist forces were deploying these chemical weapons.
I never said that I knew who did it. I just said that the evidence we had was much weaker than they're telling us, period. That's what the article said. I can't apologize for the way it was interpreted.
I guess what I'm saying is that the reaction to this story did not occur in a vacuum.
You don't understand that.
I understand, but let me ask you a question. The reaction to this story did not happen in a vacuum. It happened in the context of observers seeing you on ever thinner ice, sourcing ice, and wondering whether the boy is crying wolf because there's a wolf, or because the boy is just seeing wolves because that's what the boy is expected to do?
Do you want my answer to that?
I do.
Boo-hoo. Just boo-hoo. Who cares? I write my stories. I'm not doing it any different reporting that I did 20 years ago. And believe me, the criticism I had for some of those early stories, going back to Mili, going back to the Kennedy book, going back to the domestic spying, it just is acute. You're just all forgetting it. It's always the same issue. How can he pot? He sees things under the wall. He doesn't have good sources. This is not new. When you're running stories that counter the narrative, and you have a press, particularly I worked at the New York Times. You're committed to your narrative. So I do counter narrative, and that has a cost. But you know something? I've been around a long time. I still have my fastball, and I just have learned to pretty much ignore a lot of the critics, because a lot of them come at it with, I don't know, just part of it. I have no idea what some of the animus is about, but most of the animus about this one is simply that everybody in America, all the press, hook, line, and sinker for the story. They took it all, and whatever questions that were raised, they shoved aside. With any doubts about why Bin Laden would be living so close to a couple of Pakistan military bases all by his lonesome with no significant backup, that all those questions just disappeared. And that's lousy reporting.
Cy, I want to thank you.
Okay. Goodbye, bud.
Seymour M. Hersh's article, The Killing of Osama Bin Laden, was published in the London Review of Books. You can hear our full report about Hersh's story in this weekend's On the Media.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.